When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Jen.
I'm Ginny, and we are the Art History Babes.
Natalie's not with us today because she is on vacation up north.
In the mountains.
But she is sorely missed. So, Nat, we love you and hope you're having a good time. Today, we are talking about the Bacchanal. And in good fashion, we are having our own personal July 4th Bacchanalian celebration.
Bacchanalia.
Just disclaimer.
So this episode's getting a little silly because we're already significantly intoxicated at the moment.
We've been in the pool. We've been in the sun. We are ready to record.
Bacchus is here. We've called him and he is here.
We were literally outside and we were saying, Bacchus!
Just in the middle of the pool, just crying out,
Bacchus!
Bacchus!
Where are you? He's here. He's been invoked, and we're ready.
We're ready for it. So before we get started, what's everyone been up to? What's going on in everyone's lives?
Let's start with you, Corey. You've had some adventures.
I've done so much museuming in the past, 48 hours. It's been ridiculous. Was just in San Diego and went to the, I think it's the San Diego Museum of Art, I believe.
Museum of Man.
Well, I did that too, but I went to both. But I went to the San Diego Museum of Art, which was dope, but they were also, their modern wing was under construction, so that was kind of a bummer for me. But they had this really sick exhibit on quilts. And and I like the craft element, but what was cool, what was really cool about it is it really got into how quilting relates to color theory and how involved color theory and Joseph Albers is in quilting. Ooh. And how quilts were made with certain colors to create certain effects, optical effects. Sure. So it was just really interesting. It was really just visually stimulating. That was cool. Then, also in San Diego, in, what's the name of the park?
Balboa.
Yep, Balboa Park. I also went to the Museum of Man, where they had a exhibit on cannibalism.
Yes. Whoa.
Which was so cool. So cool. It was super interesting. And it, engaged in, a lot of pop culture references. And it also... It kind of took this post-colonial approach to cannibalism and the whole mentality, for so many years, referring to a certain group of people as cannibals was kind of similar to the whole savage mentality. They are savages. Mm-hmm. And the whole exhibit was great. It was so great about but you should stop and think about this and be if you were in this situation, would you eat human flesh?
Yes. I don't even know what the situation is, but yes.
And that was really interesting, and I was really excited that they were doing that because I thought that was really cool. They also, my favorite part of the whole exhibit, they did, they created a version of the Oregon Trail, the game we all played in elementary school.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's same aesthetically, the same visually, the same.
Yes.
The way you play it's the same, except it was called the Donner Trail.
Oh,
that
wow.
makes a lot of sense. I was gonna say the Donners.
Yeah.
If I had been in that, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. But in this case, you don't die of dysentery. You die of being eaten.
Yeah, and it got dark, but at the same time, not really. It was just I was just playing my game, and I was I got a decision to make. I just have to make this decision. Wow. So it was really, it was a really well put together exhibit. It was super interesting, and it just explored cannibalism in all these different areas of human history, and it was just really fun and really interesting. So yeah. If you're in the San Diego area, check that out. And then the next day... I got to go to LACMA in LA, LA County Museum of Art.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And
they have a great Snapchat, by the way. You should follow them.
I should follow them.
I did not know that.
It's on point.
I should check that out. But so I spent the day at LACMA. Some really great stuff. They had like a German Expressionism exhibit. And then like a life-changing James Turrell called Breathing Light, where you like walk into this room and it's kind of exactly like Drake's Hotline Bling video. like actually the girl sitting next to me was like, I feel like I'm in Drake's video right now. And I was like, word. but it's way more disorienting and just like, it's weird. There's like, when you first walk in, there's like this sense of almost like fog, but there isn't any fog. It's all like light tricks. And then you like move to like the edge, like this precipice. Like it's literally a precipice because you could fall off the edge. And then you just stare into this light that like gradually changes colors. And it's like looking into the infinite abyss.
That sounds like it would give me flashbacks.
It's pretty trippy.
Having a real dark time in there.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't dark. For me, it was the opposite of dark. It was like, oh my God, like, I just want to walk. Light. Yeah, I want to walk into the light.
Walk into the light.
But it could be overwhelming if you were on some type of psychedelic, for sure.
So don't go on psychedelics.
Probably not. Unless you're in a really good headspace, then maybe it could be okay.
Or do it and let us know how it goes.
Yeah, let us know. But I definitely had a moment, like, I took off my glasses, which any of you who know me, I'm, like, crazy blind. And, like, but it's, like, the cool thing about being crazy blind is lights get
really... Crazy blind.
They get really... I'm not actually blind. I shouldn't say that. But, like, I can't see anything. It's all just, like, blurred color. But the cool thing about having really bad vision is when you take off your glasses and stare into lights, it gets real weird. It was just all around real weird. You actually have to take off your shoes and put on these, like, socks. Like,
whoa. Wow. That just got, like, even more esoteric. Like,
it's, like, a whole experience, but it was amazing. And I came out and I was, like, warm and tingly. It was so cool. So cool.
Well, Corey, it sounds like you had a fucking badass time.
It has been a good few days. It really has. Good few days for sure.
Damn.
But yeah, some good art experiences. But now we're back and we're having our own little personal bacchanal, which is pretty...
It's fitting. It's a holiday weekend. You know, the birth of our nation. Our great nation, indivisible, under God, or I don't even know the rest. I honestly don't. And he totally
forgot. You did a good job.
That was great.
You know, the great thing about this weekend, the great thing about being able to partake in our own personal bacchanalia is the fact that, okay, so Corey's been having an amazing time just traveling and having a ball. Ginny and I have been
responsible,
working our asses off at our respective jobs. Those of you who may not be in the know, which is probably most of you, so Ginny is doing a super interesting, awesome internship in San Francisco, and it is a... It's a full-time gig, right?
It is. It's a full-time gig.
So Ginny is running museums.
It has been busy. I mean, we were doing our grad school thing, and then that was done. It was like, boom!
And then you went straight to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I identify with that. I know you do. Damn thing. Yep. Only I'm not running museums. I'm making sure that food and produce and all kinds of, like, food products are not... covered in poison.
That's so important, though. Yeah, that's, you know, so important.
It's real weird. When you graduate with a bachelor's degree in art history, sometimes
options be limited.
Sometimes there's not a lot of work out there for you, so you end up taking a job as a chemist at a toxicology. Why am I asking you? A toxicology lab. I work at a lab where we check to see how poisonous your food is. Rest assured, it's really not that poisonous. All right, let's bring it back.
Let's get on topic.
So you know, we're bringing it back, and today's topic is bacchanals. Bacchus liked to show up. He liked to show up to regular Joe's And he would temporarily release them from the trappings of everyday life. So Bacchus just shows up. You're out in the fields tilling the wheat. And suddenly there's Bacchus. And Bacchus typically would show up with a bro from the mythological world.
Oh, like his little Satyr.
And Bacchus would show up with his friend.
I actually I looked up the actual definition of is it
of a satyr?
Satyr or satyr?
I think it's satyr. It's satyr. Yeah.
And
satire.
And I really enjoyed it. One of a class of lustful, drunken woodland gods.
Oh.
And I was like, that's all I've ever wanted to be. Really.
I work in woodland, by the way, so I've met a few of those guys.
But those are some solid characteristics, for sure.
Oh my god.
But yeah.
So, you know, Bacchus would show up and he would release you from your problems, and he would release you from your problems with wine. And this is a huge trope in the world of classical painting. And that's where we're going with this today. So let's switch over to Ginny. Let's talk about some of the roots of the Bacchanal. What is a Bacchanal? Let's talk about it.
All right. So a Bacchanal is, to be put quite plainly, is an occasion of drunken, raucous revelry. So this immediately connects to the god Bacchus, but before there was Bacchus, there was Dionysus. And so if you know even a little bit about Greek and Roman mythology, Greek mythology was kind of the OG, right? So then the Romans adopted a lot of this mythology and just gave the gods different names. Mm-hmm. So it started out with Dionysus and went into Bacchus. So Bacchus was really this kind of, he was the god, or I'm going to switch back and forth actually between Dionysus and Bacchus, and then we'll later just stick to Bacchus.
They're the same dude.
Same guy. So Bacchus, Dionysus, is the god of the grape harvest, of winemaking, of partying, of fertility, and kind of this chaotic, just letting loose of all inhibitions.
My kind of god.
Essentially, he's the chaotic good in the world. So, sure.
Like the necessary chaotic good. And the thing about Bacchus/Dionysus is that he was the last god to be welcomed into Mount Olympus. And his mom was actually a mortal. His dad was Zeus/Jupiter, so like the main dude. The lightning dude. You know the one. So he kind of had this connection with the everyday people, because he's kind of one of us, but he's a god and he likes to party. So you can see why he really connected with
people.
And
everyone likes a guy that likes to party.
How could you not? I mean, that's everything you just said. That's the guy that I want to invite to my party. It's like, dude, Bacchus just rolled up with a keg. It's about to get real.
This is 100% off topic, but I saw this is on a documentary about Saturday Night Live. way off topic, but stay with me here. And they went into this whole thing. It was super interesting. It's about Saturday Night Live and the history of Saturday Night Live. And they went into this whole thing about how Will Ferrell's kind of version of George W. Bush is kind of the reason why George W. Bush got elected, because everyone saw this really goofy, funny, ridiculous dude that liked to have a good time in Will Ferrell's George Bush. They were they looked at him and they were that's a good, I think this is the exact quote from the documentary. They were that's a guy I'd like to have a drink with. And in the end, that ended up being our president. So
Will Ferrell, you done fucked up, dude.
So everybody likes someone that likes to have a good time.
No, it's very, very true. I mean, this is also 100% off topic, but I'm not even like a huge baseball fan, but my dad is, and he was just talking recently about Tim Lincecum, who used to be a pitcher for the Giants, and he got busted for smoking weed, like while he was driving back home to Washington or something. And for San Francisco fans, they were like, "Yeah, Lincecum, we love you. You're a great dude." No,
it's a very San Francisco thing to get busted.
But it's
over.
Also, yeah, it's just like a human thing where you like people. That like to have a good time.
Humans, we have a very particular genetic makeup, and part of that makeup says that we want to get fucked up all the time.
Apparently. So apparently.
No, that's just real. And we've been doing it since millennia, mm-hmm. and it's not going to stop anytime soon. So the spirit of Bacchus is with us.
Oh, it absolutely is. And I mean, you know, as early in ancient Greece, he began showing up in a lot of different art forms, primarily sculptures, but also, you know, designs in ancient Greek pottery. And he often showed up as a nude, somewhat androgynous figure. And he had these followers, like one of them we talked, how do we say, satyr?
Satyr.
Apologies. A satyr, centaurs, and hermaphrodites. And these are all like his crew that just like to party and traveled around with him. And so as we're moving into the ancient Roman period and Dionysus becomes Bacchus, Bacchic art can often be quite erotic.
Oh, yes.
Intentionally shocking. And there's certainly elements of seduction and kind of revelry, of partying, of, you know, this kind of gluttonous excess. And that really becomes per the course of Bacchic art. And I read a really interesting book, and we'll put this on our website. It's called Ecstasy, Understanding the Psychology of Joy, by Robert Johnson.
I need to read that immediately.
It was really interesting. It was very interesting. So he talks a lot about mythology, particularly relating to Bacchus, and how, you know, when followers of Bacchus began developing and they, you know, these bacchanal events took place, getting drunk, it was partially about having a good time, but it was also directly linked to getting on like a higher plane. So getting into a higher reality that was closely connected to the gods. So in getting really fucking drunk was a way of like paying tribute to Bacchus, to being closer to Bacchus, and therefore being closer to the rest of the gods, and kind of breaking free of the restraints of mortal constriction. And so that's where we really see this kind of bacchanal start to take form as, yes, having a good time, but it's also pretty spiritually based. And I have a couple poems that I can read.
Oh yeah.
and then I'll pass the torch. So I found a couple poems, and so the thing about Bacchus is that he generally came with like a posse, right? Yeah. So he was with some centaurs, he's with some hermaphrodites, he's with some satyrs. God, that word, it's really
satyr,
hard for
satyr,
me.
Yeah, satyr.
Satyr.
I'm, every time, it's going to be hard. Okay.
Bacchus would show up in a chariot being drawn by two cheetahs. Because why not?
Because we all know that cheetah print is the most raunchy animal print.
Who doesn't want to show up at a party in cheetah print? I mean...
Like, can you think of a raunchier animal print? Maybe snakeskin, but not.
No,
even.
I'm gonna go with cheetah print.
Yeah. Cheetah print, and you know,
I think it's because of Bacchus.
Get out of here with the zebra stripes! All right, it's all about the cheetah.
Yeah, we're gonna say that the people rocking the cheetah print. It's actually like a cultural statement there. It's,
yeah,
we're hearkening back to Bacchus.
Yeah,
what's going on?
Absolutely,
there.
Absolutely. Okay, so I found some poems from a particular instance of someone coming upon. So this is the myth of Ariadne. And are you going to talk about that more, Jen? Or were you just going to talk about the painting? Because I didn't actually look into the actual myth that much.
Okay. I can talk a little bit about the myth. You go ahead and read some of that poetry.
I'll read these poems and then Jen's going to elaborate. It'll be great. Okay, so here we go. And as I sat over the light blue hills, there came a noise of revelers, the rills. Into the wide stream came of purple hue. 'Twas Bacchus and his crew. The earnest trumpet spake, and silver thrills from kissing cymbals made a merry din. 'Twas Bacchus and his kin. Like a moving vintage down they came, crowned with green leaves and faces all aflame. All madly dancing through the pleasant valley to scare thee, melancholy. Whence came ye, merry damsels? Whence came ye? So many and so many and such glee. Why have ye left your bowers desolate, your lutes and gentler fate? We follow Bacchus, Bacchus on the wing and conquering. Bacchus, young Bacchus, good or ill betide, we dance before him through kingdoms wide. Come hither, lady fair, and join be to our wild minstrelsy. I don't know if I said that last word right, but that's what it says. I feel like I was reading "Twas the Night Before Christmas."
You were a little bit. You really were. I picked up on that vibe for sure.
That was beautiful. Do we know if that was by Ovid? Was that Ovid?
Was that Ovid? Did Ovid write that?
Excuse me. Was that Ovid?
So one of the poems I found was by Euripides, and then. This one, we'll put this one on the website because I'm sorry, because this is an article about Titian and Bacchus paintings.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of, we should talk about Bacchus painting.
So the painting in question is Bacchus in Ariadne.
Yeah. Ariadne. I love that name. If I have a daughter, I want to name her
that
Ariadne.
That is beautiful.
I think it's gorgeous.
So it's a painting by Titian, and this work was the subject of several poems by such poets such as Catullus and Ovid, and it's considered one of Titian's greatest works. So in the work, it's depicting the story of Ariadne, who was left on the island of Naxos by her lover Theseus, who deserted her.
Dick.
That dog. His ship sails away to the far left of the work, and she's discovered on the shore by the god Bacchus. And Bacchus is leading a procession of revelers, as he does. And he is in his chariot. And his chariot is drawn by two cheetahs. Of course. And so in the painting, he's depicted in midair. He's leaping out of his chariot. And he is going to protect Ariadne from the beasts. And the beasts are his beasts. So that's obviously like a pickup whole situation there. Like, oh no, young maiden, let me save you from my cheetahs. So anyway, he is obviously trying to bang our young heroine. There are a couple other things happening in the painting. There in the sky above the figure of Ariadne is the star constellation of Corona Borealis, or the Northern Crown. And there's a significance here as Bacchus promises the entire sky to Ariadne, where she would then become the constellation of the Northern Crown.
Damn.
Isn't that lovely?
That's very lovely.
He falls in love with Ariadne on first sight, and he leaps from his chariot, drawn by two cheetahs, towards her. Ariadne had been abandoned on the Greek island of Naxos by Theseus. The picture shows her initial fear of Bacchus, But he raised her to heaven and turned her into a constellation represented by the stars above her head. That is from the National Gallery's website, by the way. It's lovely. It's just lovely. It's a beautiful work. We're going to post it on the website, arthistorybabes.com, by the way. And we will make sure that you guys can check it out for yourselves because it's very beautiful. And this is just one of several amazing paintings of Bacchus. Bacchus
so
is just,
yeah.
Everyone wants to paint Bacchus. I mean, how could you not?
I know.
Ultimate party.
Especially
animal.
Bacchus and Ariadne. Oh. Like, there's another one that Titian did of the two of them. And Bacchus has, like, a very particularly tiny penis, which was in vogue back then.
Yeah, because big dicks were barbaric. No, that's real.
They were, like, they were considered to be ogres.
Oh. It was really ugly. If you had a big old schlong, you were considered barbaric. People would say, put that thing away. I don't want to see that huge cock.
Anyways, so Titian's painting, pretty seminal work of the Bacchanal, like a pretty important Bacchanalian painting. We'll have it on the website. You can check it out. But so we've been talking about the Greek history of the Bacchanal. And what kind of like happened is, as you can imagine, these festivals, they were problematic for some people. They were like, we don't want that. We don't want people engaging in drinking and gratuitous sex and all of this craziness. And it very quickly turned into something
insidious.
Yeah. Insidious is a great, that's not the word I was thinking of, but that's a great word. Mm-hmm. It became very quickly, people started looking at
y'all are having too much fun.
Yeah, there's something wrong with this here. And so then we have the government essentially getting in and kind of...
In Roman times.
Yes, in Roman times.
So yeah, let's transition into that. So what became known as Bacchanalia were the Roman festivals of Bacchus. So once again, Bacchus is the Roman equivalent of the god Dionysus. So the Bacchanalia can be understood as a variation of the Greek Dionysia, which was just the Greek version of these festivities in the name of Dionysus. And they were very popular. They were popular and well organized, and they were mainly popular in the southern Italian peninsula, which makes a lot of sense because that is where there would have been contact between Greek and Roman civilizations. So Bacchanalia were associated with Rome's native cult of Liber, which is where we get the word libation.
Of course.
Nice. And so this, there's popular scholarship says that these festivities arrived in Rome around 200 BC, but like all mystery religions of the ancient world, there's very little known of the actual rites. So we depend on a guy named Livy. So Livy, some 200 years after the initial introduction of Bacchanalia in Rome, offers a scandalized account of what the Bacchanalia was. So modern scholarship is very skeptical of Livy and what he alleged to be these like frenzied parties for Bacchanalia. But they can agree that Bacchanalia were typically hugely sexual. There was a lot of sex and promiscuity, and there was also a lot of violence. It was actually a violently sexual event. Not to get too deep into it, but, you know, trigger warning, it's safe to say that there was a lot of unconsensual sex happening, and and these sort of these parties, these bacchanalias, were the subject of some. They were the subject of scrutiny by the Roman Senate. So the Senate became aware of bacchanalia rites, and they said, "Oh no, 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 no! This is dangerous. They're breaking all these laws under the guise of religion, and we can't allow this to happen." So there were some heavy reforms. Eventually, there were rules that were instated into the bacchanalia, such as there would be a ratio of men to women. So 3 women to 2 men. They considered it safer for there to be more women than men in these events.
And also just like backtracking a little bit kind of on this whole consent, non-consensual stuff going on. Like, it's interesting that the Bacchanal actually started as a strictly female event.
Yeah.
When it first like began, it was only female. Like, and then we let the men in and all hell broke loose.
So, you know, modern scholarship suggests that there were many issues with bacchanalia. So bacchanalias were highlighting a moral panic among the Romans, who were very concerned about keeping their hegemony among their, not only their republic, which was soon to become an empire, but also their conquered territories. Rome was very much worried about, like, we need to keep everything chill, we need to keep it all under control, and this is very much an instance of out of control festivity. Yeah. We need to curtail this immediately. Something else that was very problematic for the Romans was the fact that these bacchanals were completely devoid of class distinctions. So plebeian classes as well as the highest classes could be intermingling at these events. They were sworn to secrecy at these events. You couldn't say who you were. You couldn't you couldn't call somebody else out.
Interesting.
I saw, you know,
Senator so-and-so.
So yes, Senator what's-his-face was at the Bacchanalia. Like, you couldn't do that. So that was also very problematic for the Romans, who historically were hugely interested in maintaining class distinctions. Eventually, the Bacchanal was the subject of a reform known as the Senatus Consultum de Bacchanalibus. I don't speak Latin, so excuse my terrible pronunciation, but this brought the Bacchanalia under the control of the Senate, and essentially there was now very restrictive rules over the Bacchanalia.
And the Bacchanalia essentially at that point became a sign of degeneracy. Like, yes. Any type of Bacchanalian behavior was degenerate at that point.
Yeah, and an interesting thing is that men were forbidden to be priests of Bacchus. So
interesting.
They considered it so threatening that for the Senate, they figured, we'll just have women be in charge of it. Because, you know, what can they fuck up, right? They're just women. So that's what happened. Little did they know. No, just kidding. But really, so that's really what happened with the Bacchanalia in Rome. Even though there were tons of reforms, the Bacchanalia persisted. And even though it became associated as a sign of Roman degeneracy, for many, the Bacchanalia remained a very important part of life. These festivals really did carry with them this idea of being able to disconnect from daily life and really just connect with basic human drive, basic human instincts, which apparently are those of having a lot of sex and drinking a lot of wine. Right. Who would have thought?
So let's kind of get into a few images, just dive into some we have a couple of interesting, there are so many images of the Bacchanal.
It was hard to pick.
Yeah.
Bacchic art is a league within its own, and I looked into it, and then I got tired, and I stopped.
One of the most famous, which I think we've actually already used, like, on some of our social media, is Caravaggio's Bacchus. Yeah. Where
that's my favorite.
Sweet baby Bacchus is holding his...
So seductive.
He's seductively gazing at the viewer and holding his little, like, chalice of wine, and he's surrounded by fruits and flowers and things. So that's a very well-known image of him that you may be familiar with. And once again, that'll be up on our website. But just a few other ones we found. Like we said, we found the one with Titian. What was the one you found, Jenny, of this literally baby Bacchus?
Adorable baby Bacchus.
I found this painting by Guido Reni, who is a 17th century Baroque painter. And we'll put this on the website as well because it's a delight. It's a chubby baby Bacchus, and he's drinking, you know, like a hearty glug, glug, glug from a glass jug of wine. And then he is peeing at the same time, and then his little barrel of wine that he's leaning on is leaking wine. So it's kind of like this double stream effect.
So there are connotations.
Yeah,
he's
but
so
it's
cute though.
It's great, and he's got like a little grape wreath on his head, and
he's a little wine gut.
He's definitely imbibing. That is exactly what he's doing. It's super cute. And then another one I found was let's see, from 1537. Martin van Heemskerk, Triumphal Procession of Bacchus. And this is, I think it's an interesting one, but like I said, there's so many images of just like Bacchic celebrations, but I really like this one. It kind of takes influence from like Roman sarcophagi and like friezes. It's kind of got that same feeling, but it's like a painting. And just my favorite part of it, I mean, there's many, many individuals fully nude.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of interesting things going on in this painting. But my favorite, like the thing that stuck out to me immediately is there's this dude, like right in the forefront, kind of on like the left side of the painting, and he's doing like a bridge, like a yoga bridge, with his like right leg up in the air, just like getting it, just doing his.
He's so amazing.
What is even happening?
He's just doing his thing. He was like, this is what I need to do right now.
They caught him mid-backflip.
Yeah, it's pretty.
He's killing it, you guys. He's killing it.
I also like this painting, and I mean, I haven't looked enough into it, but it's like very multiracial. There's like all kinds of skin tones and stuff, just like having a good time together.
When is this painting?
And I think that's great. 1537 to 1538.
That's even more surprising.
Yeah, right.
There were multiple races.
I know, right? I was like, hey, look at that. There's people of like all colors. That's really great. Because isn't that what we all want? Just like all people to get together and have a Bacchic celebration.
Yeah. I'm down.
Me too. But it's a really interesting, and there's a lot more action going on in this painting. But yeah, you should check it out just for Mr. Backflip for sure.
So I want to talk about one of my favorite Bacchus paintings, and that is the work by the Spanish painter Velázquez, known as the Triumph of Bacchus, but it's also known as Los Borrachos, which means the drunk people, or just the drunks, however you may like to interpret it. But it is such a great work, you guys. Oh my
Isn't
god.
Isn't this like your background on multiple things?
It's just so fun, like, gosh, I just can't get over it. In the middle, highlighted, Velázquez was known for his use of this very dramatic light, and So Bacchus is shown in highlight in the middle of the painting. He's lighter than the rest of the people in the painting. And this was meant to not only highlight his divinity, but also to distinguish him from the common everyday folk that he is visiting in the work. So he is here among 17th century Spanish peasants, and they are having a great time. They're all pretty rosy-cheeked. That's the sign. Yeah, and my favorite thing about this painting are these three men in the middle who are, they just look like they have seen you crossing their path, and they're saying, good friend, come drink wine with us.
Yeah, it's like you just came into the party and they're like, hello.
No, you'll see.
Welcome.
When you look at this painting, there's one right at the middle, and he has a hat. He's looking directly at you, and you have met this man at your local dive bar.
You know him.
You have met him at your local dive bar. You have talked to him. You probably had a pretty good conversation.
You probably did a shot or two with him.
Yeah, most likely. He exists. He exists today, and that's what's so great about this painting is because you look right at it, you see this random ass dude right in the middle, and you're like, I have met that guy.
And he's so friendly, and he looks so happy, and he just really wants you to come and drink this wine with him. And I love this painting for so many reasons, but my most favorite thing about it is the fact that Velázquez paints Bacchus as a man who shows up and brings wine to these hardworking peasants that are just everyday contemporary people that Velázquez would have seen on the street as a Spanish man in the 17th century, mm-hmm. painting what are known today as bodegón style paintings, which mm-hmm. are paintings that draw from everyday life in the Spanish tradition. And what I love also about this painting is that Bacchus is shown as kind of like a pudgy guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a little bit of a gut, and you can tell that he's a guy that kind of parties. And, you know, in his face even.
Look at those, like, ruddy, plush lips.
Yeah. His lips are plush. He's a young man, and he's got a ruddy complexion. He has the ruddy complexion of a man who drinks a lot of mm-hmm. wine.
Yeah.
I could go on and on about this work, but
this work is amazing. And one little, like, side note, if you zoom in on, like, the glasses, the cups in this painting, what was common, especially during, like, the 17th century with wine glasses, people liked to, like, fuck with people, I guess, because they'd have these really wide but shallow wine glasses, and the trick was that you would continue to drink and get very drunk, but you wouldn't spill your glass. Like, that was the sign of, like, a true veteran drinker.
That's evil.
And that, I know. I know. And meanwhile, like, if you ever look at
it. It was like the Baroque era, or, like, I mean, I guess this goes all the way, but it was, like, the classical, like, party foul,
yeah,
like, idea.
Exactly. It's like, if you don't spill anything, then you are really worth your salt.
Yeah,
like, and you are one of us.
You guys, it literally looked like a saucer with a stem.
Very wide and very shallow. Yeah. It would be very difficult. I don't think you could buy a wine glass like that.
No. I don't want to, because I would spill that sober.
No joke. Yeah. All right. So those are just a few of our favorites that you can check out. We're going to kind of move into what the Bacchanal means in contemporary culture. And to do that, I'm actually going, as we mentioned before, we're having a little bit of a party right now. And we have kind of an in-house DJ who happens to be he also happens to be our own personal Bacchus. He has kept the art history babes in wine for, like, a very long time.
He's just been pouring wine this whole time.
He has just been,
my glass has not been dry.
I know, it's amazing. But he also has experienced what is often known, at least if you just Google, like, Bacchanal, you're going to get a bunch of stuff about Carnival in Brazil, which is really
interesting. They rhyme, and it's for a reason. reason, yeah. I guess.
So I'm going to go grab him because he knows about that. I'll be right back. Okay. You guys keep talking.
Yeah. So modern day Bacchanals. I don't understand why we don't call our festivities Bacchanals more often.
We should.
But I think it's something to bring back.
I think so, too.
And I encourage you listeners.
And Bacchus is like a guy's guy god. Yeah. No, he's just a friend.
I encourage our listeners to bring back the Bacchanal. Oh, we have our guest here. Oh,
this
here.
Is exciting.
This okay. is our guest.
So oh, our
here, I will now. Let him sit in my seat for a second.
All right. So this is our, like I said, our personal Bacchus right here. Leo, who has experienced Carnival and can tell us a little bit about this very Bacchic celebration.
It's very cool.
It's so what's it like? Like, what goes on at Carnival?
It's just a good time all around. It's beautiful people and bright colors and wonderful music. And, of course, a lot of drinking and dancing. It's, you guys would love it, actually.
Is it debaucherous at all? Or is it just, like, good vibes? Like,
there's a side to it, of course. But, I mean, for the most part, it goes for a long time. It's many days. So you pace yourself and you just kind of enjoy the people you're around and the place that you're in. And we kind of go back to like that primal state of we're all equal and we're enjoying this mass celebration. So there's usually very little in the way of hierarchy. It's just kind of this.
That sounds so great.
We're all in the same place. Let's party and have a good time.
Awesome. That sounds so wonderful.
Leo, how many days would you say Carnival lasts?
So in Brazil, at least, the place we went into, which was like the interior of Brazil, which was kind of the place. I mean, we think in Brazil to go to like Rio, where all the big parades are. But that's definitely a one-off. Like in most places, Carnival is in kind of a rural area, a little town of a couple thousand people that get run over by 50,000 people who are there to just have a good time.
Awesome.
But probably like 5 days. Six days.
That sounds about Bacchanal.
Yeah, it does. Do you get a lot of people from outside of Brazil? Like, is there a lot of like touristy vibes, or is it really just kind of everyone melds together?
You know, I was fortunate to see it in a very like authentic place. So I got to go to the rural part of São Paulo, actually, or I'm sorry, of Mato Grosso, which is this center of Brazil. So I got to see it in a very authentic sense. But most people, obviously, again. Think of Brazil in Rio de Janeiro and that big, the floats and the big parties that you think of. But of course, we're all trying to find like that little hidden gem, you know, off the beaten path. And the same thing goes with Carnival. Like you definitely want to try to find the true authentic celebration instead of what tourism has done to it.
Leo, that sounds very sexy, and we are very glad that you are telling us about this story.
Thank you very much. That I think that really, like, that's, I mean, that's definitely, I think, what the Bacchanal tried to really, what's the word I'm looking for?
Invoke?
Yeah, invoke it. That was the sense of the Bacchanal, so, like, I feel like it's alive in Brazil, but I think it's alive a lot of places. It
can
seems
happen
like.
Anywhere.
It's alive point. Here tonight, folks.
It is. It can happen anywhere. Good people, you know, good wine, beautiful
aww,
sunshine.
Man, I love this. This is so
well,
cool.
Thank you. Thank you. Leo.
Thank you
so much.
Our good friend, Leo. What a guy.
So Brazil Carnival, that's a good contemporary example. I mean, there's different festivals. I mean, like, festival culture is so big right now that you could easily kind of group that into the Bacchanalian spirit, I think.
Yeah.
But one particularly interesting manifestation of the Bacchanal, which Jen is going to talk about for a minute, is how Bacchanal is represented within, like, the kink community. So, Jen, if you'd like to...
Yeah, so a couple of things. We're on the West Coast over here. So, as someone who has been raised in Bay Area, California sort of culture. So Folsom Street Fair is a big thing here on the West Coast. So those of you who might not be aware, the Folsom Street Fair is the world's largest festival celebrating kink and fetish community lifestyles. And I've been to the Folsom Street Fair every year for the last 4 years. It's really fun. And as a result, I have made a lot of friends with people who are in the kink community. And so one of my good friends, who will be known as Alex, he wants to be known as Alex, he wanted to be known as Baron Hard, and I said, no, my good friend, I will not refer to you as Baron Hard, you will be known as Alex. So, Alex is a very good friend of mine, and Alex is somebody who's very active in the kink community. So, little background, kink really refers to pretty much anything outside the norm of what we consider to be like traditional sexual relations. Kink refers to people who have very specific fetishes and whose fetish lifestyle really shapes their lives. And this is, it's actually like pretty huge. The way that people shape their lifestyles around their fetishes, which is a topic for a whole different podcast. But for now, we're going to talk about my friend Alex's experience at a modern day Bacchanal. So Alex went to a Bacchanal a couple of months ago. And at this Bacchanal, he experienced some of the traditional rites of Bacchanals that we have been discussing so far. So there was an orgy, there was a lot of promiscuity, a lot of sexual relations among people, a lot of drinking, basically a huge celebration, and there was a lot of sex and wine involved. But something that I felt was very interesting, and I think really it does a good job of wrapping everything up for us here today, is the issue of consent. So consent, I feel, has always been important, but as of lately, I think that it's kind of a hot button issue among a lot of conversations that are happening. We are aware of some of the issues with consent that have occurred over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Most recently would be the issue of the Stanford student who underwent the horrible sexual assault during a drunken party night. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of issue there with how does one consent when you are in a situation where you're drinking a lot of alcohol and you might not be able to say for sure whether or not you consent to mm-hmm. sexual touching. And that's really murky territory. So in a situation like a Bacchanal, which is known for being a drunken party with a lot of sex, how do you negotiate the issue of consent? So my friend Alex was great about letting me know about these precautions that are being taken. There's a lot of responsibility that comes into the modern day Bacchanal. So when you show up to a Bacchanal, you are required to fill out consent forms. And the consent forms have the rules. Mm-hmm. And the rules are no touching where there is not explicit consent, no sort of sexual, any kind of sexual interaction without clear consent is not allowed. If you are too intoxicated to give clear consent, you are moved away into an area where you need to, like, get your bearings. You need to drink some water.
Get your shit together.
You need to get your shit together. And so, you know, how do you know? How do you know? So he told me about drink tickets. They have drink tickets at these events. Mm-hmm.
That's
and
smart.
Each person is allotted 5 drink tickets. And you don't get them all at once. You get them throughout the night. If you're too drunk, you need to sit out. And nobody can bring in outside alcohol. There is no outside mind-altering substances allowed. You need to show up there with your own faculties. You must be sober, and you show up, and they give you your drink tickets, and that's what you're allowed to do for the night. Everyone there needs to wear protection. Mm-hmm. Even if you are in a polyamorous relationship where you are fluid bonded with somebody, fluid bonded is the term in the poly community for the partner that you have, that you have sex with, without barriers. Mm-hmm. Even if you are fluid bonded with somebody, you may not partake in any sex without a condom or even dental dams for oral sex, which is like, I've never even seen a dental dam, so that's amazing.
Yeah, I was like, is that saran wrap? I don't
know. It's basically saran wrap. I know, it's you know, and I love...
They're covering their bases.
Really. I know, that's great.
Good, you know, for what? Them. And I love that it is a...
Safe sex, best sex.
It's an event. Yep. It's a safe sex event. It is a event that is all about consensual sex. And this is going miles away from our traditional bacchanalia, which, let's face it, the Greeks and the Romans,
they didn't even know.
They were doing a lot of unconsensual things. And so it's very good to know that the spirit of the bacchanalia is alive and well today with very strictly defined parameters of consent and protection. Yeah. And I am just really glad that that's the case.
That's good to hear. That's really good to hear. That's great. Like, I think there are a lot of things about bacchanals that are great and I really value, but they're obviously with changing times, there has to be kind of changing constraints or conceptions of things. And so that's good to hear that bacchanals now are like still in the spirit of a bacchanal.
Yeah.
Like people are being safe and responsible and respectful.
And I want to say thank you to my friend Alex.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks. For giving me the scoop on the bacchanalia, because the element of secrecy and anonymity has not faded over the last 2,000 years. And therefore, the bacchanalia remains.
You got an insider scoop.
And, you know.
That's cool.
I know that a lot of other shit went down that I don't know about. And
that's okay.
And that's up to the imagination, you guys. You just make your own fantasy, okay?
The general takeaway is embrace the spirit of Bacchus. Drink that wine. Have a good time. Yeah. But also, sex without consent isn't sex. It's rape.
Yeah.
So don't fucking do that shit either.
And wear protection, you guys.
Yeah.
You know, because HPV is everywhere.
Is that what we're ending this episode on?
We don't have to. I'm just saying.
HPV is everywhere?
We'll end it on something better. Oh, slightly more uplifting. Do we know what we're doing for our next episode? We didn't even talk about it.
Hey, we're just going to talk this out live for you guys. My idea, and this is totally inspired by that quilt thing I saw, I think it'd be really cool to do color theory.
Cool.
Like, talk about, like, color theory shit, but... What's your idea?
My idea is I really want to take you guys down the road of graphic novels and comic book culture. And I would love to do an episode on my boy, Robert Crumb, who is so problematic.
That'll get interesting.
Ooh, he's just,
Do we want to do those in order?
I don't know. Well, you know what? What do you guys think?
Or we can ask the boys out there, like, hey, what sounds better?
Hey, yeah. Go get a vote. Go get a vote.
Color theory or graphic novels?
So while Jenny's getting a vote, I would like to also open it up to our listeners. If anybody wants to leave a comment or an email, I would love to, A, have some of our listeners weigh in on our podcast, B, if anyone's got any ideas for us, we would love to hear them.
Love it.
Let us know.
They said color theory.
Oh, did they?
Okay.
So I thought they were going to say that. Yeah, boy. But, I mean, we'll do both of them regardless. But we'll wait it out and hear from you guys, too. But potentially our next episode's color theory. We're going to do them both, so don't worry about it.
We'll talk about it.
We'll talk it out. But we would love to hear any... Hi, pup. We would love to hear any feedback we can get from you guys. Like, anything you're interested in hearing, like, we would love to drink wine and talk about it. Like, this is a very wide open visual color podcast, or visual color, visual culture. I'm drunk. I'm sorry. Not sorry.
We're going to go jump in the pool.
Yeah, immediately.
Bacchus is with us tonight.
Yeah. This shit's silly.
Bacchus be calling.
But we, for real though, email us arthistoryvapes@gmail.com. We'd love to hear, like, anything you want to hear. We will do an episode on it, I promise.
Yeah, comment on our Twitter. Comment on our Instagram. Comment on our Facebook.
We got all that shit.
It's everywhere, and we want to know what you guys want to hear. So let us know, Art History Babes.
That's who we are.
We love you guys.
Thank you so much for...
We really do love you.
Like, so much. Like, you don't even know. Like, we really do. We're actually, like, super excited right now because we're only four episodes in. We just hit... like number two on Art History podcasts on iTunes. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, you guys, if you search Art History Podcasts on iTunes, we are currently number two, which is super exciting. So if you go on iTunes today, subscribe to Art History Babes and rate us, you can help us be number one.
Number one!
We want to be number one, you guys. Help us be number one.
Anyways, thanks for listening to this really silly episode. We hope you all are having an amazing 4th of July.
We love you.
We really do love you. Thank you so much. Art History Babes out.
Out.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.